Awesome. And we are good to go. We're recording. Karen Freeland, welcome to the show all the way from New Jersey. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
My pleasure. So let's dive right into it. What's your backstory? You know, give a little bit of context, I guess, on you for anyone that's going to be listening or watching this as to who you are, who's Karen, what's she about, and I guess a little bit about your journey that's brought you to where you are today in your life.
Sure. So that's a lot to unpack in an intro, but I'll do my best. So Karen Freeland, I grew up in upstate New York and was a dancer for most of my life. That was my passion. And didn't, you know, really know what I wanted to do, right? I kind of was in high school and thought, you know, I really love dancing. I'm not super motivated to have probably a corporate job. You know, I probably should figure out where I want to go to college. How about SUNY Brockport? And so it was a college in upstate New York that was known for dance. And I thought, perfect. I don't even have to write an essay to get into college. This is my kind of school. So I went there for school, danced for 4 years. And again, didn't really put any stock into what I wanted to do with my life. So I was about 2 weeks away from graduation, called a friend, and she was living in Miami, Florida, and said, I could use a roommate. Do you want to move to Florida? Okay, sure. I don't have a job. I can act in Florida. I can dance in Florida. Why not? So I spent a few years in Miami before ultimately making the transition to New York and trying my whole gig on the soap circuit and acting and waiting tables. And then, you know, I was mildly successful, but that big break always seemed like it was just out of reach. And I was about 24 years old, and I had about $24 in the bank. I thought, gosh, you know, there's got to be something else. I want to be a little more secure. And so I started putting my resume out there and ended up getting a job in sales, which turns out I was pretty good at it. I sold Blackberries for T-Mobile for a bit. And I didn't even know what a BlackBerry was. I had no technology background, but I had a gift of talking to people. And did that for a while and then just moved my way through corporate America to the point where I was actually chief of staff for the president of a $13 billion business for a while and held some other prominent positions at some top brands. But I kept feeling like something was missing from my life. I just didn't have that sense of purpose. And it wasn't until I went through a pretty traumatic, maybe too much of a word, but to me it felt really traumatic, midlife crisis. And then coming out of that, sort of seeing opportunity to write a book. And so now I'm in the whole process of writing a memoir that I'm really excited about and building my brand and my platform around this new book. So that's the 2-minute clip notes of my life, if you will.
The abridged version. Let's go back a little bit and start on, because there'll be different things, I guess, at different phases of what you've gone through that'll be sort of maybe interesting to different segments of people, right? So if we start with the creative sort of acting side and what you're doing there, and obviously, you know, it's not the most secure kind of industry in the world. When you say moderate success, because it's good to give context, what are we talking about here? We're talking about a few day player roles, some guest star stuff, what kind of stuff are you doing?
Yeah, so a lot of smaller commercials or print model stuff. You know, you can find all kinds of Getty images with my face on them. Doing a lot of little theater things, off Broadway down in St. Mark's and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I was on From Justin to Kelly. I was the bathroom girl. I did a couple of a B-rated, I call it B-rated, but it was a horror flick called Passing Fancy, where I was a supporting character. So that was probably my biggest role, played Gal.
When's this? Are we talking 2000?
2002 to 2008-ish.
Right.
The time frame that I was really in it. And then a lot of background work. I mean, I think we've all, as actors and actresses, gone through that, right? Where it's, you know, come work on All My Children and just get your feet wet as a background actress. There'll be an Under 5 coming soon. Don't worry. And then it just felt like, okay, I've been doing this for 2 years now. Like, where's the Under 5? And in the meantime, I was kind of working. Eventually, I transitioned into pharmaceutical sales. So I would go in the morning, see a couple of doctors, talk to them about the product, go shoot an episode of All My Children or Guiding Light, and then I'd pop back out into my sales role and go see some more doctors and, you know, take them to dinner at night or whatever I had to do for my job. And it worked really well for a while. And then the economics just like didn't work anymore. And I was like, I could make more money just doing my pharma job than scooting out for, you know, $125 for, you know, a background role. So it became one of those things where I had to make a choice, like, what do I want to do? What are my end goals? And at that time, you know, I had some materialistic views, I think. You know, it was like, I'm healthy, I'm young, everything's great. Well, I want money, or I want the flexibility to do these things. And I made that switch to kind of come out of acting. But I will say, acting, you never leave that. Because even in corporate America, I mean, there's times where you just have to act, right? You have to act like you believe in the policy that was just put forth, or you are having a bad day, but you have to show up and be on for this meeting. And so it gives you a life skill that I think, you know, if people do ever make a transition, I mean, there are so many things you can pull from being an actor or an actress that it really gives you a leg up on a lot of other people who don't have that ability to speak publicly and behave the way actors and actresses can.
Yeah, I mean, I always quote this Hugh Jackman quote where he said he thinks everybody should take an acting class at least once, because a good acting class, not some of the crap ones that are out there. But a good acting class is basically like therapy on steroids and or counseling, whatever word doesn't trigger people. And you know, like, that's so true. The amount you unpack in a good acting class that lets you go inwards and learn about yourself is going to benefit you in every walk of life thereafter. And you know, if you're going to work in a corporate job or whatever kind of other capacity, there are so many transferable skills, because acting isn't really about pretending to be someone else. It's actually about understanding more of the truth of what we are as humans and as an individual, and then the stories that we tell. And it's really, you know, psychology and so many other things that you just see through this prism of TV or theater, but actually it's just a life thing. And so I totally get how that would transition quite naturally over to say sales, especially, right?
Yeah.
So would you say that acting and performing was, as from a career at least, was a passion, or was it just something that, like, obviously, I guess without putting words in your mouth, the passion probably wasn't there to pursue it as a career. Otherwise, you'd still be doing it, or would have done it at least at that time. So there was an interest, but.
No, I think you're right. I mean, there was definitely a level of passion there at one point. And I think what I let happen to me is just this idea of what success looks like, this idea of what I'm supposed to be when I'm grow up, right? And there are days where I look back and go, damn, if I just stuck with it. You know, why did I give up on myself or give up on my dream? And at the same time, I look at some of the achievements that I've had now in other areas of my life and think, well, I never would have had that experience. So sure. I try not to look back too much and beat myself up for the decisions that I made at that time. But I think you're right. In anything we do, if we want it and we want it that bad, we'll do anything to be successful in that area. And nothing will stop you. Nothing will deter you, because you just have that drive and that fire inside of you. I think it's mixed. And I feel that now again as I'm starting to write my book, which is so refreshing to be passionate and to be creative again in just a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're supposed to just consume and not create, but that's what we're taught to do, at least mainstream wise anyway, right? I guess the reason I asked that was because, you know, a lot of people get drawn into the allure of the idea of acting and bright lights, and like they do it for maybe the wrong reasons because they want to be a movie star. And I know like a lot of people, I've come across a lot of people that, you know, they do a class, maybe not even a good one, and after 6 months they're getting bitter because they've not been on a TV show.
Right.
You know, and it's so counterintuitive that there's this entitlement, or the idea of what it is for them is, you know, some big glamorous thing, which it actually isn't really that glamorous half the time. And so the reason I asked is because they always say, you know, with anything, but especially, I guess, performing arts, like if you don't want to do it, like, no matter what, if you can't see yourself doing it when you're 85, if you can't see yourself, you know, doing it even for free, you know, not that it should be that it's unpaid, but that if you would still do it, if no money wasn't an object, then don't do it. Because it is one of those things where there isn't like a do A, B, and C and you get D. It's like, there's no
rule. Oh, I completely agree. And I think if you look back at so many movies, you'll be like, oh, hey, that's so-and-so or that's so-and-so. Sure. And they're in the background. They're, you know, the cashier or something. And so it is such a long game. I mean, there's very few people who have overnight success, you know, and the ones that you think have overnight success, you actually find out, no, they were grinding, going to casting calls and auditions, just like the rest of us, for 10 years before they finally got their big break.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's the whole thing with George Clooney that everybody always talks about, where he appears on ER and he's an overnight success, but actually for decades, or a decade, I should say, he was just like getting no luck. Well, he was working, but he wasn't, he wasn't known. And I think we're talking about a time where obviously it was maybe not quite as easy to do your own thing. And also I think maybe where it was a bit more taboo if you had like another job. So I guess my second point was, you know, did it ever cross your mind at that point, or did you ever consider somehow trying to find a way to juggle the two, like still working corporate or whatever jobs you had to make a living, but find a way to get an agent that would help you still go and audition and all that stuff? Did that ever?
Yeah. And I did for a while. Like I said, when I was in sales, I definitely tried to juggle the two. You know, I'd get called for Saturday Night Live and I'd go do a show and I'm shooting. I'm there until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning by the time I get home. And the next day you're got to be up bright eyed and bushy tailed. But it was challenging, right? Because you'd be sitting in your office job and you get a call, hey, they need you in New York in 2 hours for an audition. And it's like, I'm in Jersey. I can't even get to New York in 2 hours at this time of day. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe you could make it for the audition, but actually on the day that there's a the actual shoot, you have a huge ops review that, like, how are you going to tell your management team, I can't be there for this huge meeting that I'm supposed to present at because I got a job as in a commercial or on a dating game show? It just started to get tricky. But I'm a big proponent of, when you're making that career transition, not to just do it all at once. And that's why I did really juggle them for a while. I mean, when I first was in New York, I thought, you know what? I'm going to get this job at T-Mobile. I'm going to sell Blackberries for a year and then I'm going to quit. That was my whole game. I was just going to save every single penny and then quit and not have to wait tables or have to do anything and just devote my time to acting. And then I got my first commission check. And I was like, four numbers on a check? I've never seen a check so big. And I marched right down to a Coach store and I bought myself a purse and a scarf and some other Coach junk, right? No, it's not junk, but you know what I mean? Like material things that I didn't really need. And it was like, that was, as they say, like the rest was history. Like I just got sucked in to that New York lifestyle, the corporate America thing, and making money.
Which is a false kind of premise because it's built on a house of cards, really. And this is whole,
totally,
you know, a Western society that's actually manufactured based on debt as opposed to anything else. And so we're all sort of taught to spend on stuff we don't really always need. And so it goes back to a little bit of that question or that thing you mentioned about what is success, you know, and that's different for everybody. And I guess not everybody takes the time to figure that out for themselves and with clarity. And so they're sort of going by either an external idea of what they think it's supposed to be, or somebody else's idea of it, and probably like usually parents or something. And so then you end up, I guess, getting really disappointed and potentially, you know, working corporate America for years and years and years, and then realizing you're not happy and burning out.
That's exactly it. That's exactly what happened. And I had for so long, I mean, probably over like a, at least like a 9 year span, right? When I entered corporate America, I was chasing a title and a paycheck. And to me, success was, you know, first starting out in my first role, it was getting to marketing manager. And then it was becoming associate director. And then it was senior manager or director, right? And it was just like this constant clawing your way up and just trying to make a name for yourself. And every time I got a pay bump or I got that title, I was really happy for like 2 months, you know? And then it started to wear off again. And I couldn't figure out, like, but I just got everything that I wanted. But then I was already so focused on getting the next thing that I could never really truly be present and be happy with the gift I was just given. And it, yeah. You know, I struggle so much with that, like, conflict, because on one hand, we always want to be pushing ourselves to be better, to take it to the next level. And that's really, there is a healthy drive there. But at the same time, if we're only ever focused on the next thing, you go through life and you miss all the beautiful things that are happening to you and all the gifts around you. So it, I always struggle with that whole like wanting more and then trying to tell myself like, no, just enjoy this moment now. But I think it is so important because you're right. You just get burnt out.
I think it depends what you want in terms of wanting more, right? Though, because I think the material side of wanting more is wanting more money, wanting more things, wanting a job title that gives you another 10K a year, whatever it might be, versus wanting more in the perspective of wanting more that you can actually experience and create. And I think they're kind of overlapped, but they're also very different. You know, I've worked in digital agencies for over a decade and I see the game. I know the game. I personally wasn't drawn to the job titles. I went up the ranks. I could have gone further. And I appreciate that for a lot of people, like, you know, it would have been dream jobs and dream clients and dream job titles. But there's kind of a fallacy to it because there is a glass ceiling.
Yeah.
You claw so far. And then, well, once you get to like the super head of department, well, unless you're going to be CEO or something, you usually see people hop around then from company to company, just getting the same job title somewhere else for a little bit more money. But that can't last forever. You know, idea of, do you know Robert Kiyosaki? Have you heard of him? Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Have you heard of that book?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So I'm reading one of his other books and there's a line in there that I really liked where he says he wrote it just after the crash of 08. And he says, there's no such thing. He says job security does not equate to financial security.
Mm.
But we believe that if we have a secure job, we're going to be financially secure for life, which is the more and more you look at it now, especially when you look at maybe our parents' generation who have gone through that boom period of the late 70s, 80s, 90s. And you kind of go, well, they actually didn't have the kind of big payout they thought, or they didn't get to retire with like an amazing pension or 401k over there. And so you then go and think, well, what were they clawing their ass off for 30 years? What was that about? And they weren't job secure either necessarily, because a lot of times they had to move around. So I think it's interesting because there is now this shift into a big group of people that are going to still go back after this pandemic and try and just get a secure job. And then another group, and they're going to struggle in the long run. In the long run, they'll struggle, or they won't be happy, more importantly.
Yeah.
But there'll be a lot of people that have gone through a shit time with this and maybe actually will realize that there's more of a chance to find happiness and maybe earn a few less zeros, but do something that feels good and that you can actually create. And I guess in a roundabout way, that sort of sounds a little bit like what you're doing or trying to do with your book and your brand. Yes. And obviously, I guess you were doing this obviously before the pandemic, but I guess the pandemic is a good example of, you know, why you should have been doing it in the first place.
And exactly. Yeah. It's like having a security net, really, you know, and for so long, I only focused on work. I mean, to the point where I almost was damaging my marriage and my relationship with my children. And, you know, like I was just living for work and I wasn't working to live. And that's a big difference. And so, yes, I started writing this book in 2009. And so maybe I'll just set up the story a little bit for you about how the book came to be. So for those of you that have been pregnant before or have, know people who have had a baby, some obstetricians will recommend that you stretch yourself out. Yes, this is going to get a little gory here. Before you give birth so that you don't tear when the baby comes out. So the doctor's like, yeah, you just take a little olive oil, you put it on your fingers, and you just stretch your vagina out. And I was like, okay, thanks, lady. Like, I'm not doing that, but thanks for the advice. Like, okay. So I leave the appointment, I go home, and my husband was working nights at the time. And so one night, I guess I was bored, and I was like, maybe I'll try that old olive oil trick. So I go in the bathroom, I like turn the lights off, I don't know why, I like put out towels, I get the olive oil, and it's like a shit show. Like there's olive oil flying everywhere, I can't get my hands in the right position, like nothing is working. So finally I'm like, okay, this is just not, no, I'm just going to have to tear. Like, I don't know, whatever, I'm going to take my chances. And so my husband comes home and he's like, what the hell happened in the bathroom? There's olive oil everywhere. And I'm explaining this to him, and he's like, oh my God. He's like, you should write a book and call it I Don't Know My Vagina, because it is clear that you do not know how this thing works. And I was like laughing because he's right. And I'm like, how is it that I'm born? It's like being born with an arm, a leg, a foot, and not knowing how it works. And at the same time, I'm like, who would want to read a book about my vagina? Like, what would I even write about? This is so dumb. Like, thanks for your dumb idea. But then I started brainstorming. Like I would be in the shower doing my hair, my makeup, like doing whatever. And I'm thinking, wow, well, there's that story about the time I lost my virginity, or that there's that story about the time that I, you know, got that urinary tract infection and thought it was an STD, or like, you know, all these like ridiculous stories. And I thought, we might actually have something here. So I started typing and writing, and I got, you know, a couple chapters done. And then life hit. Then the baby came. Then the work came. Then it was like, okay, now I got another mouth to feed. I got to get that next paycheck. And everyone,
because you were still in corporate America when you
I
were
was
going
still
through
in
this,
corporate
right?
America.
And this yep. is after the crash, so I guess things had maybe yep. been okay.
09.
But yeah, but it still was a bit rocky.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, right now is not the time. I gotta kind of stick through this, and I'll just write my book on the side. But you know, it wasn't enough of an importance to me that I didn't allocate the proper time to it. So I just, years went by, every once in a while I'd pull it out, I'd write a couple chapters, and then I'd walk away from it. And so when I had this like whole big midlife crisis, I was talking to someone and they were like, okay, if you died tomorrow, what would you regret not doing? And I had to really think about it, because I do regret sometimes leaving acting. I do regret not still dancing. I miss that. And I thought, well, okay, I got to be a little grounded in reality. Like, not too many people are hiring someone who's almost 40 to go on tour with them or to be a dancer, right? So maybe that's not where I want to put my time and energy. But I thought, there's nothing stopping me from writing this book. Even if nothing ever comes of it, I can say I did it. I set out to write a book and I finished it. And so the more I started writing it, all of a sudden this fire, this passion, I was like awake again. And for the first time in so many years, I just was creating and loving things. And, you know, my whole outlook on life changed. And I was sharing it with people and getting good feedback. And I thought, yes, I'm on something. Like, this is what I'm meant to do.
Well, right, that's the difference when you create stuff, right? Because when you're creating yes. something for yourself, not for like a company or doing a task, which you could argue is creative, but it's still coming, into fruition for someone else's benefit or gain or need. It's not quite the same. Whereas if you're creating, you know, doesn't have to just be artistic. I think people think creating means painting, art, books, and movies. And no, creating could be create a business, create a brand, but it's yours. You know, it's like you're leaving some tangible legacy, asset, whatever you want to call it, that has your imprint on it. And it's not going to be sort of branded with a corporate logo that belongs to some big behemoth that, you know, they'll just claim it as their own in the long run. So it feels different. It feels different when you do that. I mean, when you start it, it's obviously a period where the idea of branding as a person, like a personal brand, existed, but it was very much more unspoken and not as commonplace as it is now. Like a personal brand back then, you would just see someone like Jordan or Kobe and they have personal brands because of just who they are. And you think that's reserved for megastars, which it maybe was. But now with the internet in the last, especially I'd say 4 or 5 years, you have this boom of people who have built their own personal brands and that it's more accessible. So it's probably as good a time as any to dust off the book. And when I say personal brand, I don't mean influencers either, because I think there's a distinction. I think you have an influencer on Instagram, but a brand who's got a personal brand could be, you know, someone who has their own micro business that, I don't know, they sell donuts, like, or whatever it could be.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that whole concept around the personal branding. And this is an interesting topic also, right? So, you know, I always joke with people about the shock value that this is, oh, the book's about my vagina. But it's not. I mean, it's a look at the life of a woman who has had mishaps and misadventures with her vagina, right? But really, there's all kinds of life events covered in this book, right? So it's a help aid for other women who maybe have felt alone or gone through some of these experiences and felt, you know, ashamed of their body or ashamed of the way they behave. And it's like a cathartic release for them to be able to read this and go, oh my gosh, I'm not alone, right? Like someone else gets me. And today in our culture, I mean, these types of things are so much more acceptable, right? And I really wanted to be careful with the book that it wasn't, you know, sharing sex stories for the sake of being gratuitous or, you know, there's a fine line that I don't want to cross with the book, right? Where we can be really honest and true about what's happened in my life, but not take it too far either. You know, I think now the culture is much more accepting of these topics. So it does feel like a good time to bring this out, but that doesn't make it easier because I have 2 boys and, you know, my husband married. And so sometimes, like, I'll talk about a story and he's like, I don't even want to know. He's like, just stop right now. I'm done. Like, and he's, you know, sometimes he challenges me. He's like, you know, the boys are going to read this. And I'm like, I know, but it's real. It's what happened to me. And I don't want to censor myself that much. But it is a struggle.
I guess, though, it's an important conversation and challenge to have as opposed to... No, but because it also has to sort of, I guess, have checkpoints along the way for you to at least have that consideration and thought process. You know, at the end of the day, yeah, your boys might read it, but then they have to, I guess, what's the prism? Would they look at it and go and think, oh, I'm embarrassed? Or can you find a prism where it's like, well, actually, it's teaching me to be authentic? And obviously, you know, it depends how you approach it. And you could end up going either way, right? But there isn't always like the, oh my God, it's cringeworthy, embarrassing per se, if you find a different angle to it.
And I think hiring an editor was probably the best decision I've made, right? Which was a big decision because it's a financial investment. And I really thought long and hard about it, but I said, no, I have to invest in myself. If I want this book to be good, not even good, right? If I want it to be great, then I need someone with a professional eye that can help me make sure I don't cross those lines and hone those stories. And it's one of the best decisions I've ever made because I can see the transformation that the book has made from when I wrote it to when he's now helped me cultivate some of those stories. So, you know, I think if people out there who are maybe listening that have a dream or have a goal or something they want to achieve, you know, you have to make a plan, follow the plan, and make the investment. If you really believe in it, you have to put the money and the time and the energy behind it, because there's no career fairy, you know, whatever you want that career to be. Like, no fairy is going to jump out of the woods and be like, oh, you're so talented and wonderful. Here, your book's a bestseller. No, you got to do the work, right? You got to write the book. You got to take the time to edit it. You got to, you know, socialize it with other people, get beta readers and all these things. You know, take that and apply it to whatever your dream or goal is. We got to put in the work and put in the money.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people get off the boat right there because it's easier, safer just to collect a paycheck every month.
Right.
Until you realize, which is fair enough and fine, until you maybe realize you're not either happy with it or you have so many other commitments that you didn't take a chance on the things you really wanted to do. And that's, I think, where bitterness comes into play, right?
Yes, and that regret. And that's just a horrible place to be for me, right? And again, like, I'm not here to judge people. You have to do what works for you. But if you're sitting there and waking up every day going, what is my purpose? Why am I here? And those were the big questions that I was asking myself, you know, looking in the mirror going like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be 40 soon. What am I? And I'm miserable. You know, I'm just going through life and letting life happen to me. This, there has to be more to life than this. And so being able to really dig deep and find that passion and what's going to get you charged again, for me, I just couldn't live with that potential of regret. And waking up one day on my deathbed going, well, that's great. I'm CMO at this company and no one gives a shit because I'm replaceable and they'll just hire someone else if something happens to me or whatever. I just couldn't live with that anymore.
And it would have been easy to stay on that hamster wheel because once you're on it, especially in a big city. You know, like, because there's always a job potentially, and you go through a rough patch, but I'll just throw out my resume and I'll find another job, and you just stay on that kind of vicious cycle until they don't need you anymore. And then one day, no one will want you anymore. And then you're kind of like, but normally I find something else, but nothing's there. Or, you know, the job market starts to change because of technology, which could end up happening. And then people haven't adapted to maybe a different way of making a living.
Right.
So I think what could be quite interesting is to talk a little bit about that period of what you were calling like a crisis, because I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people have gone through something maybe similar or think they're going through it, or maybe they haven't. But I guess my first question would be like, were you aware at the time that that's what it was? Were you kind of just, what was the kind of feelings or vibes or the emotions? What was the process? And like, I guess, how did you deal with it? Did you kind of brush it aside at first or kind of just try and rationalize? And then it just kind of kept rearing its ugly head. You know, what was the experience, I guess, so that maybe people could potentially identify and not scare them because maybe they're not going through it, but at least go, well, actually that sounds not too different. Maybe I need to make a change.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. It definitely reared its ugly head for a while and I tried to suppress it. So, you know, I would be at work and I would get a task or I would get feedback on something that didn't quite go the way that, you know, the boss wanted it to go or something. And for me, it was like the end of the world. And I would find myself like crying in a bathroom at work, like in the stall, and then like trying to get my shit together. And I'd be like, I don't even care about this. Why am I reacting in this way and feeling these emotions? And when things got tough, rather than backing away from the thing that was like giving me pain or like causing me angst, I would dive into my work even more. And I would work, you know, after the kids went to bed, I'd pull out the laptop and I'd work from like 8 to 11 p.m. because I thought that if I was like the hardest working person in the room, surely the promotion would come and everyone would love me. And, you know, it was like this constant validation seeking almost. And no matter how hard I tried or no matter when I did get the validation, it would feel good for a minute and then I'd be right back to this place of like, what am I doing with my life? Why do I even care about this? And it got to the point where at that point I didn't know it was a midlife crisis, right? I just felt like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And, you know, my sister, I would complain to her and she would be like, I'm telling you, you got to do something different. Corporate America's not for you. Like, start your own thing. But I wasn't ready to hear that message yet. You know, a lot of times it's like telling somebody to quit smoking or quit doing whatever. And it's like, until they're not going to quit until they're ready to quit, you know? And I wasn't ready to accept what I was going through and to make a change yet. And then I want to say around 2018, beginning of 2019, is when it really started to manifest itself in different ways. And so I've never really told anybody this before, so hopefully you don't all think I'm a head case after this, but I drank a lot, right, which I don't really do anymore, but I was drinking a lot at night, 3, maybe sometimes 4, but anywhere between 2 to 3 drinks a night, but every night of the week. And so around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I would always have to get up to go to the bathroom. And so I would go in the bathroom, but I wouldn't like turn the light on because, you know, I'd kind of blind you. So we have one of those like dimmer switches that you could put it on real low. And all of a sudden it hit me. Like, I've just been sleeping for this many hours and I didn't know what was happening. That must be what death is like. And then the panic would set in. Oh my God, I'm going to die. And what will I have to show for it? My life been like, oh my gosh, like all these emotions. And I would ultimately end up, you know, bawling in tears. I would sneak back into my bed because I didn't want to tell my husband because he was going to be like, what the hell, like, just is going on. And I would like cry myself back to sleep. And it would happen over and over and over to the point where I was like, I don't even want to wake up to go to the bathroom because I know this is going to happen. And like, I couldn't be in the dark alone. Like, I had to have lights on all the time. And then finally it would just kind of like hit me. Like, this is a midlife crisis. Like, I don't even know how I just one day like had a revelation. And I was like, I'm so scared of dying. I'm so scared of this all coming to an end. And not having left that legacy and not understanding my purpose, that like something's got to change. I got to do something different. I can't live like this anymore. It was a dark time. And now I just, you know, how do you come out of it? There's so many different ways, but like now I just don't allow myself to go there anymore. And it's hard, right? There's days where I will go into the bathroom and it's dark and I'm like, don't even do it, Karen. Like, don't let yourself go there. We're not doing this anymore. Like, everything's going to be fine. And you just have to talk yourself out of it. But it took me a while to even have the strength to train my mind to say, we're not going there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a lot of it's rewiring old programming that we all have. We all have different things that we're wired with from a young age. And then they kind of just manifest and we're on autopilot without thinking. And we think a lot of our choices are our own, but maybe not necessarily. And then you're kind of faced with that and you have a choice to make. Do you kind of just keep going, which I think is easy and a lot of people do, or do you maybe go through a little bit of uncomfort or a lot and try and go inward and figure out what you're going to do with it? And I don't think that means that dark side goes away or disappears magically. I think you know, it's always there. It's just the awareness of having faced up to it before. So, you know, it's less scary when you've done it. It's still scary maybe, but you're like, well, I know what this is. I can deal with it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I wonder how many people come across those kinds of moments, but then still turn a blind eye. And I do believe in what you said, which is that notion of, you know, divine timing, whatever you want to call it. Like, people can't do something unless they buy into it themselves and are really ready.
Yes.
For all the will in the world, everybody else. So for you, what was that? Was it those moments, those like moments of in the bathroom that like made the trigger, or was it actually something else? And what did you start to do?
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. But also there was a video on YouTube that someone shared with me around The Secret and how you start to manifest through positive thinking and like bringing about your destiny. And there was a guy who wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul series or whatever that book was. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how, like, sort of my point earlier around the career fairy, like, no one's gonna write this book for you. And, you know, you have to take action. You have to define what it is that you want to go for. Like, have your North Star and then build your way there and chip away at it one day at a time. And that, for me, like, hearing this concept of, like, I don't have to sit here in this dark place anymore. I have the strength, I have the power within me to break out of that. I'm just not tapping into that power right now. Everything I need to be successful or to be what I really want to be is right here. It's within me. And I just have to start using it. And so I think watching that video was a big turning point for me. And there was another book that I had read called In Her Power, and actually wrote a blog about that on my website that people can check out, and kind of my interpretation of that book. But like really reading that book and starting to say, okay, I'm not going to make decisions from a place of fear anymore. That's the old Karen. New Karen is going to make decisions from a place of power, a place of strength, a place of, you know, knowing what I want to, where I want to go, rather than letting other people tell me where I should be. And so when I started to make those changes, is when I really started to see a shift in my response to things and being able to come out of the darkness. And then once I was out, it was like, well, I'm not going back there again. Like that's, you know, I did everything in my power to prevent that from happening again.
So for people that are in a corporate world, which is the majority,
yeah,
that, you know, I think if you're working a corporate job and you're happy, power to you.
Cool.
If you're genuinely happy, like you do you, because for a lot of people, you know, they are genuinely happy working for a big multinational corporation and living that life. And, you know, if you are happy, then great. As long as you're doing it for you and not because you think you need to have that job title to prove something to someone else, or because it's going to get you the 3 BMWs and the 2 yachts and the membership of the country club because you need to show off that to validate.
Like, right.
And I think it ultimately goes back to the idea of, you know, self-awareness and knowing, you know, your idea of success for you and then going from there. But for the other bunch of people, of which I think there's a lot, that just work a job because that's all they've been taught because they think they have to, and there's no other solution and there's no alternative. What would you recommend? I mean, there is no golden tip, so I'm not asking for that.
Right.
But what would you say are like certain maybe mindset things or processes or things that maybe they could try that maybe you'd used to start the transition? Because the transition doesn't happen overnight. You don't just go, okay, I'm going to quit my job, and then tomorrow I'm going to be like hunky-dory. No, you maybe have to overlap the two for a while. Maybe you
definitely do
go cold turkey. Maybe you've been kicked in the butt and you lost your job through no fault of your own, because that's what happens sometimes. And now you're faced with a reality of, okay, well, do I go and do the same thing, or do I take this as an opportunity? But there's a mindset thing that comes before the action. So what kind of mindset hacks would you suggest?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I have a mentor. She's actually a career coach for other people, but she, you know, saw something in me and, you know, was gracious enough to help me and support me for free, which is always beneficial. So make sure you tap into your network, because there's always someone out there who's willing to help you. And through some of our mentoring sessions, she actually had me go through an exercise where I needed to prioritize everything that's important to me, like on one piece of paper, but everything that's important to me, right? And don't censor yourself, right? So I had things like make $300,000 a year on there, because hey, that would be great. I would love that, right? But I had things like be a good mom, be present with my children, you know, finish my book, meet Oprah, be part of her book club, right? Like all these things that I want to envision happening and I want to bring to fruition. And then we went through an exercise. Okay, great. Now rank those in importance and then tell me how much time you spend on those things. Ooh, okay. Well, I really want to finish my book, but I'm only spending 10 minutes a day on that. Okay, maybe that's a misalignment there. And so you by doing this exercise, it really forced me to go, no, what is my priority? And where do I want to be spending my time and energy? So instead of working at night from 8 to 10 at my corporate job, now I'm writing a book and it doesn't even feel like work because I write the chapter, I go through the edits that my editor sends back, or I work on building a website, you know, or my next blog. And, it, you know, I can't, most of us can't just quit our job overnight and, you know, still pay the bills and all these other things. So I definitely don't advocate for that, but I do advocate for trying to make that transition and trying to do them both until you've got enough cushion over here that you can really make the leap.
Yeah. And I think the other important thing is the non-work or creative or branding side or whatever we want to call it. And actually what you touched on, which is like being a good mom, being a good wife, yeah. Like if your time is so consumed by your job, and you get home and you're so tired and you've, you know, got an hour for the gym and then you got to cook and that's it, you're not leaving much time left for anything other than sleep. So yeah. Where are we allocating time for things that really matter, such yeah. as, you know, your family, your friends, your partner, your kids, your parents, and making sure that we're not just running on a wheel to, you know, yes, get the job that pays the bills and then pursue the passion, but then having no time for all that other stuff. Because that's the other thing. There's no point, in my opinion, creating all these right. things that we want to create, like a book in your case or a film in mine, but then you don't have someone to share it with. You know what I mean? Right. Like,
yes.
So
totally.
And there's like, a whole circle to it.
Yeah. Have you ever done a vision board?
I did like years ago, but for me, I just can close my eyes now and kind of.
Yeah, right. Okay. So I've had three. I'm on my third. I did bring it. I'll flash it up really quick so you can just kind of like see what's on there, right? But like I had two beforehand and they were all like things, right? It was like the big car, the big house, the this, that. And then in the one time I had like a lotto ticket on there because I want to win the lotto. I thought, if I put the lotto on there, I'll win it. And my husband was like, you have to play the lotto to win the lotto. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. So I like scrapped that vision board, started over. But then finally I was coming out of this midlife crisis. I redid the vision board and it was now things that are important to me, like family or eating good, healthy food, or, you know, yeah, maybe I'm not going to be a dancer anymore, but I can go to Broadway and see the shows because of the money that I earn or whatever, right? So I can have those experiences which are more important to me than the money itself. So some of it is also just a shift in mind frame of like why you're doing what you're doing, and being able to give back to charity, right? So yeah, maybe I'm in this corporate job and I'm making some money, but doesn't have to just be for naught, right? Like how can I take that money and then give it to causes that I'm really passionate about to make the world a better place and use my resources? And when I started to think about it that way, I was like, oh, now I do feel more of a sense of purpose from having this job. And it's not just about making PowerPoints and justifying my existence all the time, right? There's a deeper meaning. And so finding that takes some time, takes some work and some introspection, but once you find it, it really unlocks a lot of happiness and joy.
And I guess also, you know, that it's a job that's not really just a job to pay the bills. It's also
right.
an investment mechanism in the short term for your book and a different platform yes. that you, I assume, would want to then take up all your time so that you don't actually need the job.
Definitely. Yes, it's funding my dream, I say. And so that's right, right? It's paying for me to host my website and it'll pay for me to take trips to when we can do speaking events face to face again, right? And do some of this motivational speaking to help other women turn their dreams into reality and to give them the confidence and the support that they need to make that transition and find their purpose in life.
I think that's a different way of looking at a job too, and maybe a slightly healthier one where, you know, especially yeah. if you're young and you're coming out of college and you think, I just got to get a job because I'm supposed to, or I got to pay off my debt or whatever it is. It's easy to get stuck in that. And then, you know, 20 years pass by, as opposed to going, go get a job. Because when you're young, actually, you can learn a lot. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. You find a good boss, you can learn from them, they could become a mentor. But yeah. have an idea that you want to try different stuff with the end goal of eventually having your own thing, whatever that is, and you have time to figure that out, but that your job is investment in that and not just a paycheck for you to go partying every weekend and get smashed and but I think it's, you know, do that, and you know, you know it's fine, but there's also more potential that you can get out of it if you kind of see it as a, okay, take a little bit of pain, learn, use it as an investment mechanism for an actual dream or goal or goals, as opposed to just
buying coach purses.
Exactly.
But, you know, I do look back, and so, like, with my president, so the way I got my editor was actually when I was chief of staff to the president, I called him up later. And I, you know, sometimes you have to have the audacity to do these things. And that was really hard, to pick up the phone and call, like, my former boss and say, hey, I'm writing a book. Because, you know, the first question out of everybody's mouth is, oh, cool, what's it about? Like, my vagina? Like, he was like, okay, interesting. This is a new side of you. I'm like, yeah. But he was so open to it. And he was like, look, I'll introduce you to my editor. I'll introduce you to my publicist and my agent. And the agent and the publicist both were like, thanks, but no thanks. Like, no interest. And the editor was like, I could help you, like, write the book. But, you know, I'm not sure this is the right project for me to, like, agent for. And then I started talking to him, and he started seeing the material. And next thing you know, he's like, well, if I ever agented for you, to the point where last week he was like, hey, can I put you on my roster as I talk to my film content manager as one of the works that I represent? Like, yeah, sure you can, right? But, like, if I didn't have the audacity, or I hadn't had that experience as chief of staff to meet the president, this editor, right? Like, these things wouldn't have happened. So, you know, at the same time, like, don't be too hard on yourself, and know that some of these experiences are just setting you up for where you're supposed to be ultimately. But you got to use it, right? You got to tap into it and have the guts sometimes to ask for things and to reach out to your network and see who can help you.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, listen, Karen, how can we round this up? What's the kind of takeaway messages here then, do you think, if someone's watching or listening? If you were going to kind of give the Cliff Notes abridged version of what the key thing would be, what would you say to somebody right now as the main takeouts here as we wrap it up?
Yeah, I think find your passion and go for it. Don't let anything stop you. You are powerful, you're stronger than you know. And if you really put your mind to it, you can achieve whatever your goals are.
Awesome. Cool. And so if people want to connect with you, find out how you work, I guess last few moments here for you, really just plug, I guess, your book or anything you want to plug, and then where people can find you on the socials.
Awesome. Sure. Yes. Yeah. So you can check out my website, KarenFreeland.com, and it's Karen with an I. My blog is on there. It's called The Ins and Outs. And so I try to put out new content every month. But I'm all about quality, not quantity. So thoughtful pieces, but less frequent. And you can follow me on Instagram at Karen Freeland. And I'm still in the process of getting the book, you know, finalized and published. So follow me, and I'd love for you to join me on this journey.
Awesome. Great. Well, Karen, thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing what happens with the book, with the journey of getting the book out there. I know that's a whole world unto itself with publishing. Yes. And self-publishing and that whole thing, but it's exciting. You know, once you get one done, you then can go on and do more. And, you know, like you said, speaking and talks. So it could open up a whole bunch of stuff for you. So let's definitely, we can circle back once you're kind of out there and promoting it and it's actually tangible, and talk about that process whenever that might be.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, Karen. Well, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. It's been great chatting to you.
You too.
Take it easy, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Sounds good. Bye.